the event lightning strikes someone near you, take prompt action to save the victim's life. Give first aid immediately and get medical attention as quickly as possible by calling 911. People struck by lightning carry no electrical charge and are not a danger to those providing first aid. Remember, you are in danger from lightning if you can hear thunder. Lightning kills. Play it safe. This message is brought to you by the Iowa High School Athletic Association and your local National Weather Service office.
Many medicines used to treat colds and flu contain acetaminophen, a pain reliever and fever reducer found in hundreds of over-the-counter and prescription medicines. But taking too much or more than one medication containing acetaminophen per day can damage your liver. So always read the label and don't take acetaminophen if you drink three or more alcoholic drinks every day. To learn more, visit fda.gov/OTCPainInfo. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Food and Drug Administration.
And at 6 o'clock, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, hello. Hi, I'm here.
Yes, we all are assembled here, and we're waiting for the State of the Union to begin. We're 3 hours early. It begins at 9, and I guess we're just going to sit around and wait.
Yeah, people are still filing in behind us, but luckily the tickets that we bought guaranteed us early access, and that's why we're here.
When you think of it, we work here, and yet we bought tickets. I think it's a bit of a scam, actually, because why do we even just come to the radio station to watch the State of the Union address? And yet, it's a tradition where literally dozens and dozens of people jam-pack the place year after year to do this, and I guess traditions just die hard.
Yeah, it was like a part of a historic tour, I thought, and well.
The thing is, we only get the good seats because we're in the studio right now, and you know, the large screen TV is down the hallway.
That is true.
We'll sort all this out later. It's not your problem, listeners. Not your problem at all. We have all kinds of things to discuss and go over and review. It's been quite a week. A lot of things going on. A lot of scandals. A lot more people announcing runs for the presidency in 2020 on the Democratic side. You had this. This happened last week, where Howard Schultz announced he was going to be running, or at least exploring the idea of running as an independent. And I don't know how that exploration is going so far, Howard, but you must know by now that it's not really landing all that well.
Yeah, I think maybe there's some second guessing of that, and maybe reconsidering exactly what the exploration. Maybe they did all the exploring they had to. I mean, they went and they put a hypothesis forward, and that hypothesis was disproven, I think, maybe.
Yeah. But, you know, I've never seen such a negative reaction towards a third-party candidate before. Usually, third parties are seen as kind of a good thing. But now it's like, no, we don't want a third party. You know, we have to make sure that the only party that has a chance wins this time. And anybody that stands in the way is an enemy of the people, an enemy of the state, enemy of democracy, etc. And, you know, there's a part of me that really doesn't like that, but I kind of get it.
Yeah, it's maybe something like that is in favor of stability, like this finding comfort in a bit more structure and a bit more order to the political rhetoric and goings-on. People want to know that government's working. They don't want to have to check up on it or find out that it's being checked up upon, you know, mm-hmm. and it needs all kinds of supervision. They want to know that it's running and those individuals are doing what they should be doing. And maybe the rhetoric towards, you know, the Democrats being the radical left, I don't think that's even what they're putting forth. They just kind of want the thing to function.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's sort of what I'm feeling from it.
It's just the cluelessness, though, of politicians. Even though he's not really a politician yet, he's acting like one for sure. I mean, here's what one of his people is saying. I'm not concerned about the negative headlines. I think they fuel us. Really? You think those kind of headlines where you're basically just seen as a clueless billionaire who is just going to ruin everything for everybody? That's energy to you guys. That's what you need. Please. I mean, what new is Howard Schultz bringing to the table? You know, I don't really see anything. I mean, yeah, he called Trump unqualified, despicable. Join the club. A lot of people have been saying that for a long time. We don't need a billionaire standing up and saying that to make us say, oh, yeah, that's the guy that's going to lead us through this. I don't, you know, but there is nothing, even if he was not an independent, you know, if he was a bona fide candidate in a party that had a chance, I would not see anything in his statements that inspired me. He's saying we can't afford universal health care. Well, that's, you know, I've been hearing that for a long, long time. And every time somebody says that, I just get more and more frustrated because, yeah, we can afford it. We can afford all kinds of things. You know, you have a habit of watching 60 Minutes, You know, it's on apparently every week. And that's how I heard the Howard Schultz thing, because he was talking there. But I also heard another another piece, I think it was 60 Minutes, where they were talking about one of those their fighter planes. You know, what's it called?
The F-35.
Is that the one? Yeah, the one that they never use, that they're spending all this money on. I think it's $1.2 trillion. All right. There is so much money wasted. Even the military, where the money goes, admits that there's waste. They ask for less. Congress gives them more. Every single time this happens, we are just in love with spending money on military. The money is there. The money is there to rebuild the roads, to have high-speed rail, to give us all health care. Other countries in the world do this. We say we're the richest country. Well, you know what? We are the richest country in many ways, but we also give away so much money. We gave away $1 trillion just last year in the tax cuts for the rich. Okay, that could have paid for so much. So don't say we don't have the money. We do. We just don't know how to spend it. We don't know how to allocate it properly. It's there. And I'm just sick of acting like we're a poor country all the time, expecting our people to pay for everything. Whether it's a natural disaster, you know, that's what your tax money goes for. But we wind up paying ourselves with GoFundMes and bake sales and things like that. We shouldn't have to be doing that. Our government should be stepping in. You know, people in Puerto Rico still haven't recovered from the hurricane. That is unacceptable. That is unacceptable when the money is already there. It's, you know, you have an excuse when you're in a poor country where you don't have the funds. But when you do have the funds, inexcusable. No doubt Trump will cover all of this tonight in the speech. I can hardly wait.
Yeah, I don't even understand what will be said that will reflect, I think, what people are yearning for. And I hear, like, political competence. That seems to be what Schultz is missing. You know, that experience and lip service has to be backed up with action of some kind. Mm-hmm. And you want to be able to trust that confidence you can have and security with someone who's like a little bit safer. You want that to be backed up with something stirring. And I didn't get that excitement from Schultz, like the big projects and the something that's really stirring that we could look forward to and that really speaks to people's situations. And I think political actors that have an understanding of what people are going through and what needs to be done and then actually following through, that's the stuff that's going to really ring through out of this pool.
You know, when Cory Booker speaks, I get enthused. I say, yeah, we can do that. You know, when Beto O'Rourke speaks, I'm like, yeah, we have the potential. We can accomplish this. When Stacey Abrams, well, she'll be speaking tonight.
Oh, yes.
You know, she'll be giving a Democratic response.
Indeed.
And I'm sure that I'll be standing up and pumping my fist in the air and saying things I probably can't say on the radio. But I'll be enthused. I'll be inspired. And the Schultz guy, sorry, not doing it for me. So just going to rip you up and put you over there in the disqualified candidates.
I didn't know we were doing that.
No, we have to do that. We have to do that. We need to... I need to get rid of all this paperwork here. Okay, here's another one for you. oh boy, this guy in Virginia, man, Governor Northam. I mean, come on. If cluelessness was an Olympic sport, you would at least have silver. I'll tell you that right now. Come on, look. I don't know much about walking around in Klan outfits and blackface, but I do know that if you get accused of something and you want to make like you're innocent, you don't cop to it. You don't say, I'm sorry for doing that. And then the next day say, yeah, but I didn't do it. It doesn't work. Even if you didn't do it, that's the dumbest thing you can do. You know, if you think you're innocent or something, say you're innocent. Don't apologize for doing it. But he apologized. And then the next day, when everyone expected him to resign, he doubled down and said, no, wasn't me. Wasn't either one of those. Of course, it's hard to understand how a yearbook photo pops up on the page with your name emblazoned on it, and it's got nothing to do with you, and you don't know anything about it. It's kind of hard to. I mean, I don't know how many yearbooks I'm in. I think there's three total: the junior high school, high school, and college. If there's any others I don't know about them, I swear to God. And I know, you know, what was said about me. I think we all do. And you know, I know what's in those photos that were put on you know, in there. And I've long since made my peace with that, all right? And nobody can, you know, can surprise me with anything that, that isn't already there, that I haven't already paid the price for. So, you know, it's simple. It's easy.
I as well. Yeah. I it seems like there's some revisionism and misremembering going on and outright silliness getting into the weeds on something that is not something necessarily you'd be too proud of.
And by the way, if anybody still has one of those Ward Melville High School yearbooks, we've almost got them all back, and I'll pay $100 for the last ones so that we can just get them all off the street, just in case anybody has one. Go ahead.
Is that what the shredder? Look, I didn't understand why we were renting that.
I've been out of high school a long time, and almost all my years have been devoted to shredding all those copies. But it's not as easy as you might think. It really isn't. But no, I'm good.
Yeah,
pictures. Long since made my peace with it. No, but this is insane. Talk about cluelessness. This guy just doesn't seem to understand how this isn't landing what he is doing. He's already said that he was you know, one of the faces in that yearbook. First of all, that's, you know, when I first heard the story, I thought, okay, you know, this is some stupid high school thing. No, it's not a stupid high school thing. It's not even a stupid college thing. It's a medical school thing. I didn't know medical schools had yearbooks, but apparently they do, and apparently they're as juvenile as juvenile school. And in Virginia, how did nobody catch this? That's what I really don't understand. What was the circulation of this yearbook? Did nobody get one? Because, you know, if I went to medical school with a guy who was now governor, I think I'd kind of remember, oh, that's the guy that dressed up in the Klan outfit in the yearbook. Well, I think I'll keep quiet about that. I'm not going to tell anybody. And let's see how he does as governor. You know, there's a lot of Republicans in Virginia. I can imagine that at least one of them would have been interested in checking out his past. So that right there really surprises me that nobody did this. And, you know, there's all these reports saying it was some right wing group that uncovered this. More power to them then. They did their job. That's what they're supposed to be doing. I can't believe the people that put him in power didn't do their job and do their research. So let's not be surprised and indignant when something like this is uncovered. It should be uncovered. That is what, you know, speaks to somebody's moral fiber. And, you know, I also believe in forgiveness. The guy has done good things since then. He's not acting like a racist now. He's just acting like an idiot now. Let's not condemn people who have made mistakes in the past. Let's reach out to them, make sure that they atone for their sins and that they enter into a dialogue. They don't deny things. They don't try to excuse things. And, you know, we all have things in our past. We all have things we shouldn't have done or said or thought or God knows what. Nobody has really the right to walk on higher ground, I think. We all have to communicate with each other. But when you see something like this, you know, you got to call it for what it is.
Yeah.
So he's...
He got out.
He's done too.
He got out in front of that, and it ran him right over. And oh man, it just goes on.
Yeah. And anyone else fall into the scandal pit this week? It's it really is. It's fun to watch. You don't know where it's going to hit next. Okay. Well, here's, of course, you know, Trump is just such an easy thing. They leaked his schedule this week. Did you see that?
Yeah, I caught a couple stories, and apparently there's this this large segment of what is called executive time, and that's basically what he does all the time.
We all know what executive time is. We all have, you know, we like as much executive time as possible. And apparently in his schedule, and no, executive time is not sleep, so it's not what, no, this is waking, working hours. He 60% of his waking working hours is executive time, hours of the day when there's nothing specific for him to do. I love the way they describe it as being a creative period, a period where he a more creative environment that has helped make him the most productive president in modern history. That was Sarah Sanders shoveling with both hands there. I honestly, when you consider You consider what Trump does, okay? Consider his actions when he is on the job, when he is doing things. Consider all that he has done in the 2 years that he has been in power. And for people like us that have our particular point of view, almost all of that universally is bad. It's awful. It's you know, stuff we're going to have to repair for many decades to come. So I don't understand the outrage here. 60% is not high enough. You know, if it was 100%, I think then we could rest easy because then he wouldn't be destroying the country. But, you know, 60%, okay, that's good. Imagine if it weren't that high. Imagine if this guy was reporting to work every day and doing something with every hour, the state that we would be in. So, no, this is not a problem. This is good news. This is really good news. 60% idle time or just lost in thought of God knows what. We need more. We really need more. So let's expand that.
Yeah, I have to say it. I hate to say it. Daydreaming. Take up daydreaming. Rock climbing.
Well, no, I don't know about that, but I mean, yeah, no skin off my nose, but I just don't see him going for it.
Making model ships in a bottle, putting, what is that called? Putting ships in a.
Yeah, I don't know how that even works. I think you have to build the bottle around it, but
well, sure.
Get him thinking about it anyway.
Yeah. However, maybe we get it up to like, you know, 90, 90. You know, 94 that's it. Yeah, 94%.
Uh-huh. So, you know, I mentioned that there's a lot of cluelessness out there, a lot of people that don't seem to get it. It's true not only in the world of politics, it's true in all kinds of outlets. It's true in the media quite a bit. And this is a story, actually, that ran in Bloomberg, on Bloomberg this past week. It's about the hazards of people with expensive yachts having their paintings damaged by flying corks from champagne bottles.
What?
It's not even a funny story. Expensive yachts that double as floating art galleries can lead to unexpected and costly mishaps. Priceless paintings and sculptures kept on the vessels face damage not only from storms and storing conditions, but also from random threats, including breakfast cereal splashed by the owner's spoiled kids and the yacht's crew popping champagne on board. I'm not going to read any more of this story, but just, you know, that's just, if you want to look it up, art on the super yachts, beware of wine corks and unruly children. This, it's in the wealth section. There's a wealth section in this media outlet. And, you know, meanwhile, there are people literally starting GoFundMes to pay their health bills. I mean, that's what most GoFundMes are, to pay for your health care in this country, because that is how crazy we are with money allocation, that we make people do that. Whereas in other places that we've been to, we talk to people all the time. We've talked to the most conservative people in England about healthcare. And, you know, you may have heard criticism about British healthcare system. And, yeah, you heard criticism about everything. They criticize the trains in Switzerland, for God's sake. People criticize things that we think work really well. But one thing that they will not do is give it up. We ask these conservative people, you know, there's flaws in the system, but would you, you know, like to go to an American-style system? The question was not out of our mouths before. They said, oh, no, never. Because in these countries, you don't go bankrupt paying for health care. You don't lose your home if you get sick. It's just basic civil rights that you have that are understood. And we don't seem to understand that yet. We just don't seem to get it. And I cannot for the life of me understand why somebody who doesn't have this would be against it. You know, you think you're paying more? No, you're not paying more. You're paying less because you're not paying all the bills that you would have to pay if you didn't have health insurance or didn't have, you know, an affordable system in place. I get tired having the conversation and trying to get people to understand this. And I just feel that one day when the system actually is installed and working and people see, just like, you know, Social Security or Medicare, it works. Hey, okay, this is something we should hold on to. We even see it with Obamacare in its limited fashion because it doesn't go nearly far enough. But there are many, many people that swear by it now. That, I mean, we both benefit from it. We have health care that, for the most part, works. I've complained about things that are wrong with our health care system, but having that is a really, really good thing.
Yeah, and people tend to look at it as an all-or-nothing kind of game where you have one or the other system, or it's a private, a public, and now we have this sort of healthcare marketplace and different configurations, and the constant ebb and flow of dismantling one thing and replacing it with something else. That churn tends to disrupt, I think, people's confidence in having a system. But once something's in place, like you said, they don't want to take it away. And I think immediately of the subway or the trains out here, people maybe aren't as impressed with them or you know, have many complaints about the system. But try living in a part of this country that doesn't have it at all, like just buses. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of comparison's. Anybody who's not from New York City or the tri-state area, that's the first thing they recognize is that system that many people can critique who've grown up with it. And so anyway, it's something that's constantly being fixed and needing maintenance and supervision, I guess, to a degree. And that kind of care for your own country with something as vital as health, like it's a foundational thing for workers, for families, for innovation and the things that make us spectacular, that is driven by those resources as much as water or other important stuff for life.
Let me ask you a question. Do you feel, this is a little off topic, but I'll come right back to the topic in a second. Do you feel... since the days that this program began back in 2003, this country embarked on a few military adventures in a particular part of the world, mainly Iraq, Afghanistan. Do you feel like we're more secure as a result of that? Do you feel like that was a good plan? Because, you know, on this program and many others, people were dead set against it, saying, bad ideas, this is not going to work, we're not going to accomplish anything. And I just wonder... have we been proven wrong in the, 16 or so years since then?
No, I don't think I feel any safer. I don't really notice a difference in the everyday sense that the average citizen might.
So hold on a second. I'll ask the questions here, Kyle. Sorry, I'm getting a Congress mode. So your contention is that if we'd be in exactly the same shape as we are now, or dare I say, even more secure, if we hadn't gone into Iraq, if we hadn't gone into Afghanistan,
well, we would have had less new equipment and not as much practice. No, I'm kidding.
Please answer the question.
I'm kidding. No, that was a joke, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sir. I beg your pardon. No, I.
And I'm not even talking about the thousands of lives that have been lost on our side.
All
and
sides.
Tens of thousands, if not higher, on the other sides. Okay.
Yes, we would have been way better off.
So imagine that. Imagine that we just didn't do that, that we listened to all the hippies on the side that said war is bad, but in this particular case, they were absolutely right, and nothing was accomplished. Oh, maybe you had Saddam Hussein in power. Don't those days look a lot nicer now, you know, pre-Al-Qaeda in Iraq, pre-ISIS, all that? Everything that has happened in that region since then is a direct result of our stirring the pot of George W. Bush's lies, the guy who now looks so good compared to Trump. Okay, but look what he did. Look at the mess he made and the fact that he's not held accountable for that at all. But, okay, regardless, let all the lives go. Let the thousands and thousands of people who died for no reason go. All right, let's talk about cash. Let's talk about money. By saying what you said, Kyle, by saying we shouldn't have done any of that, well, you just saved us over $5 trillion. So don't tell me the money's not there. I mean, it's not there now, obviously, but, you know, before the next adventure begins, before we go into someplace else where we're not wanted, and before we screw up another region of the world that we have to pay for decades to come, let's reconsider and say, maybe we do have the money to pay for something good for our people, and maybe we don't have to make them act like they live in the third world and you know, get something that they deserve, something they work for. Because people in this country work harder than most anywhere, and they get so little for it. They don't get vacation time. They don't get health care. They don't get decent places to live. You know, they don't get clean air. They don't get good schools. All of that is expected to, you know, to come out of their pockets in addition to everything else that they have to pay for. So this military adventurism is not working for us, and it's certainly not working for the rest of the world. So before we go into Venezuela and do something stupid, consider that.
Yeah. Gosh, I was thinking of prosthesis and all the trauma, PTSD, and other kinds of damage and real wounds.
My heart goes out to those people because I can't even conceive of what it is to go out there, put yourself on the line, and just basically follow orders and commands that, you know, you have faith in, that you trusted these people to lead you someplace that made sense, and it didn't make sense. It you know, in the end, what was accomplished? I just can't imagine the frustration, the anger, and just the sense of betrayal that I think we all should carry because we didn't do enough to stop it. Let's at least stop it from happening again, because this wasn't the first time, you know? Vietnam, Korea, all of that was insane and didn't amount to much. And in fact, made things worse. World War II, that's a different story. That's a different story. But, you know, the more military adventurism you get involved in, the less you're able to differentiate the truly worthy battles against the utter waste of time. And the more likely you'll be to not be prepared for what really matters.
And I can think of a lot of different things for that, just that dollar amount, $5 trillion.
$5 trillion.
Even 2.5 would pay for so many different kinds, would have paid for so many different kinds of foundational things in your community, in the national or federal realm, you name it, all of those things that would then enable us to move forward, to try things that we know we don't have the funds for now, or that we only dream of being able to afford as a people.
If you were a leader of a country like this, wouldn't you want to scrape together every penny to take care of your people instead of basically giving it all to the people that already have the money? You know, you would want people to have health care. You would want people to have decent infrastructure and, you know, all kinds of quality of life choices that you have the power to make. You wouldn't want to deny them that, but the people in power now, they don't really care. You know, that's why they divert the money into other things and the people are left to struggle. It's pathetic. And the most pathetic thing is that we take it, that we think this is the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And the political and religious polarization that we're at the effect of, that we're sort of left with in the dust, is that worth it? You mm-hmm. know, just hearing about the shutdown, like how little most government workers have in savings, as a keen reminder of you know, everybody getting by, you know, having to do their best to make ends meet. That stuff, that's unfortunate to hear. Like it just tugs at your emotions, and we all when it gets to that personal level, it can, you know, it can hit home. I think we should just have like some of the foresight and especially like political functions. You know, you talk about just purely like the State Department or any of these organizations that are in charge of our diplomacy. That goes back around to safety. I mean, is all of that worth it? Do we feel like we've built bridges and made a better impression with the world? And I mean, we'll hear more of those characterizations tonight, I guess.
Oh boy, what we're going to hear tonight, I'm not sure how much of this I'm going to be able to take, but just the mentality is insane. I was looking at this other story too. This really annoyed me. This actually was from last month in January. A federal judge found four women guilty of entering a national wildlife refuge without a permit as they sought to place food and water in the Arizona desert for migrants. Yeah, that is the message that we want to send, that leaving food for migrants is a crime. Literally, being a humanitarian is a bad thing. The four found guilty of misdemeanors were volunteers for No More Deaths, which said in a statement that the group had been providing life-saving aid to migrants. They can face a lengthy prison term for this. It's you know, we should be thanking these people, not penalizing them for trying to save lives. And yeah, you can say, oh, but those people are here illegally or they're coming here illegally. How much does that really matter in the big picture of human beings? I mean, really, before you feed somebody, you're going to ask, do you have any outstanding parking tickets? You know, we have to make sure that the right kind of person is saved and not just because you're human, you know, and that's becoming more and more normal. It's disgusting to see that. And just the mentality that I'm seeing, you know, every day with this whole border wall debate that's been going on, the hatred that Trump basically puts forth almost every day. It's sickening, because when he does this, when the president is saying things like this, it becomes more and more normal, and it's harder to get away from. It's harder to say things that actually sound reasonable or sound humanitarian in any way. There was, you know, something else that happened this week, which I thought was kind of interesting. The story of 21 Savage in Atlanta.
Not an American.
Yeah. Now, this is a rapper from Atlanta. I'm going to read a little bit of the story here. It was a shock for fans when 21 Savage, and that's his name, in case you don't know. 21 Savage is his name, or his, not his legal name, obviously.
Moniker.
Yeah. He was taken into custody by U.S. immigration agents in Georgia. It was an even bigger shock to learn he had been an immigrant in the first place. Really? That was an even bigger shock. Okay, fine. The Grammy-nominated rapper and his music are so deeply associated with Atlanta that the notion he was actually born in England and brought to the U.S. at age 12 felt downright bizarre. Scores of surprise tweets came after his Sunday arrest. Memes bloomed that some called cruel under the circumstances, including one of him dressed as a Buckingham Palace guard, along with an old video of him talking in a mock English accent about tea and crumpets. Well, okay, fine, whatever. Have your fun. It seems so outlandish that the prototypical Atlanta rapper is not from Atlanta, said Samuel Hine, a writer and editor at GQ, who researched 21 Savage and spent a day with him for a profile in the magazine last year. I think that's why so many people were sort of making fun of him and making memes. Yeah, I think the reason people were making fun of him is because people are jerks. You know, this is a guy that that overstayed his visa. That is his crime. He entered the country legally and then overstayed his visa. He was 12 years old. OK, I don't think many 12-year-olds just come to the United States on a visa and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to stay and live here illegally. No, 12-year-olds are kids. He came with somebody. He was brought here. And for whatever reason, did not go back. How is this not growing up in Atlanta? I don't get that, because, you know, are you supposed to be rapping about when you were seven? Is that when you know, the street scene begins, when the struggle starts? I mean, I'm sure it is in many ways, but 12 years old is plenty young to say that, yeah, I grew up in Atlanta, because you have a lot of formative years that follow that. So I don't see where the disconnect is. Okay, the guy was born in England, came to Atlanta, came to Georgia, and lived there since he was 12. Am I missing something?
No, that's a fair assessment.
So what is everyone making fun of?
I don't know. I think it's like this nativism that, like, they have more a claim to the turf if they're born and raised there. Or maybe, I don't know exactly what kind of lyrics he had that were talking about his upbringing, but I think that's plenty, like, more than enough time. There's kids out there that are from all different kinds of neighborhoods, maybe even dual citizens, you know. It's just not that unusual. I think what's worse is just how it was handled with immigration. See, like, an example of, like, that far-reaching sentiment they're trying to roll out with this talk of border security and so on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how that is the story. That these armed men come and take somebody away because they've been here since they were 12 years old and didn't come from this country, despite the fact that they've contributed a lot to the community and obviously are a part of the community now. I mean, this guy, he rapped about his youthful exploits in Atlanta, including run-ins with the law over guns and drugs. So he has a story to tell. He's sharing the story. I think that's a good thing. Now, people are criticizing him for leaving out the stuff that came before that. What, your first teeth falling out? I mean, come on. What do we need to know about somebody before he was like 10 years old? This is interesting stuff, you know, the teenage years. I think he's 100% truthful. If there's a rap song that says he was born in Atlanta, okay, then you got him on something.
Exactly.
Although he could be fictionalizing, you know, a different character. I don't know. But the point is, folks, you're missing the story here. The story is the fact that we live in a society now where these guys can just swoop in and take somebody because of where they came from. And that's just wrong. That is just completely wrong, especially if you've been here since you were a kid. You know, you don't know anything else. And odds are it was not your choice to stay here in the first place. It's just such a horrible way to treat people. And it happens every day. Yeah, it happened to a rap star, but it's happening all around us. It's happening here locally. And we're powerless to stop it. We're not powerless to screw it up, though, whenever possible. We're not powerless to, let the world know when these people are in town or slow them down however we see fit. There's all kinds of things you can do. Just use your imagination. But ICE, they are a horrible organization. They deserve to be melted. Yeah, I said it. Well, they call themselves ICE, so they had that coming.
Bringing the heat.
Yeah, but exactly. This is just, it bothers me so much to see this kind of thing happen and to just excuse it like that.
I bet Roger Stone would have wanted a letter.
Yeah, I mean, Roger Stone is complaining about how the feds swooped in on him when that's how they swoop in on everybody. Welcome to the club. You know, at least you get to stay in the country. Although, you know, honestly, to me, and tell me if I'm wrong here, tell me if this is too much. If you're in this country for 10 years and you're not wanted in another country for some serious crime and you've been a part of our culture, hey, you're a citizen as far as I'm concerned. You're a part of this country. And I don't think we're any less because of that. I think, in fact, we're probably a lot more. Why can't we just embrace that? Why can't we be happy that people want to come here in the first place? And that when they do come here, they make things better. You know, they improve our culture. We have all kinds of different food that we wouldn't have normally. We have all kinds of musicians that we wouldn't have normally. We have all kinds of athletes. All kinds of people building a better society, a better culture. You know, there was a horrible hate crime that took place in Patchogue. I can't believe it was 11 years ago when immigrant was murdered in the streets of Patchogue. And, you know, this was before Trump. This was before any of the horrible things that came from above were part of our lives. But basically, what they've done since then is they have welcomed people from other countries. They've welcomed immigrants in Patchogue. There's this great story in a paper called the Hetching Report that I just found out about on the USB mailing list. After a hate crime, a town welcomes immigrants into its schools. Patchogue, Long Island, site of a brutal anti-immigrant murder in 2008, has revamped its school programs to better assist young people fleeing violence in Central America. I mean, that is a story. That is something inspirational. The fact that people reject hatred and instead embrace that which people are afraid of.
Yeah, not making an equivalency between people who are seeking to come here and the inherent problems of different neighborhoods and so-called integration. They're not the same. Just stopping one person is putting up barriers to people who desire to be here is not It's unbelievable we're even talking about it as far as concern, you know, something we should be focused on. There are so many other more important, more pressing and needful areas that don't get the attention, yet we're drawing this equivalency to people at the border as we speak, our worst fears and horrible stories like this that happen, but you know, it are not at all the norm.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about what Patchogue Medford School District has been doing. They spent the last 4 years revamping its programming for immigrant students. The recession forced the district to lay off 50 educators, but as its finances improved, the district prioritized bilingualism. Since 2014, it's added more than 70 employees, including 40 educators and counselors who speak Spanish. Administration officials have also staffed each of the district schools with Spanish-speaking secretaries so Hispanic parents would feel welcome. They hired a new director for language programs. They added resources in an existing dual language program at the elementary school level, created a sheltered English learner program for newcomer students in the middle school, overhauled high school offerings, placing native English speakers and English learners into more of the same classrooms so they can learn from each other. It's really an incredible story here. What is going on? We need to focus on the positive things that are happening, because there are a lot of people out there who do care, who do get it. And we are the better for it. You know, this will be something that benefits everybody, English speakers and Spanish speakers and speakers of other languages as well. We will learn so much from this. Yeah, and that is who we truly are.
And those are the exact things you do to prepare for those eventualities, or to mitigate those things that you most fear about this kind of society. But you don't dismantle the society as a solution. You do these kinds of things and prepare people to get along, to be better people, but to be a better society in and of itself.
Yeah, that's what we can do. I doubt any of that will be talked about tonight, at least not in the Trump speech. But hopefully, you know, the response or things that happen in the months ahead. And I don't know what's going to happen in the months ahead. It's going to be really interesting. As long as the Democrats don't cave into anything and don't buy any of this nonsense that he continues to push, I think we'll get through this. But that is essential. That is absolutely essential. And the people are behind them.
Absolutely. I just would say, I would add that, like, if we're going to have a unifying tone, that it ought to be unifying in a global sense. There's Americans mm-hmm. everywhere. And we touch every part of this world as humans. And I would really caution any kind of unifying tone to become too nationalistic, because really, I think the world, what we all would like to see a bit more of in general, and hopefully this year is unifying everyone, you know, all people across socioeconomic stratification, whatever it is.
I don't get nationalism. I've asked, you know, I try to get things, but I don't get it. I mean, yeah, we're American. We like it here. We're proud to be American. That's it. You know, what else do we need? What else do we need? What does nationalism get you? That you're superior to everybody else? That you get to go first? Or what do they want? What more do they want? You know, is our quality of life, bad as a result of other places? No, it's bad as a result of the people we put in power. What is it that we need to boast and brag about? Why can't we just say, hey, we're Americans, this is who we are, who are you? And learn from that. That's what we do. We go around the world. We talk to people. We're always welcomed. We're always... no one ever asks, are you here legally? No one ever says, have you overstayed your visa? It's assumed that, you know, we're decent people because we act like decent people, and we like to do the same.
Yeah, and I along with that, I kind of would say nationalism is something we already have. It's not permission to be something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is something we see not just in this country, obviously. We see it all throughout. This right-wing push. And, you know, I guess nationalism means a bit more when there are, you know, our borders that might change. You know, I don't want to get into this too much, but the dumbest example of this recently I've seen is in Greece. Because this whole thing with Macedonia, okay, just to give people a quick rundown, Macedonia was part of Yugoslavia.
Uh-huh.
Yugoslavia broke up into a whole bunch of countries, one of which, since it used to be Macedonia within Yugoslavia, is Macedonia. Now, Greece also has a province, I believe, in the north called Macedonia. Kind of like, you know, Moldova. There's a Moldova in Romania. There's a country Moldova. I think there's in the Ukraine, there's something else called Moldova. I don't know. It gets a little confusing. But people were upset that they were calling themselves Macedonia because I don't know exactly why. They thought people might be confused or they thought it was an insult.
Or it would be a pretense for some sort of occupying force or something.
But the end result is
territorial
the legal name of the place was former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia or FYROM. But everybody called it Macedonia. And as a result of that, Macedonia was blocked from entering the EU by Greece until they resolved this. Well, guess what? This year they did. They came up with a solution. We'll call ourselves North Macedonia. Hey, that's great. North Macedonia instead of Macedonia. All these people in Greece started writing, saying, how dare you do that? How is that not better for you than them calling themselves Macedonia in the first place? They're calling themselves North Macedonia now. It's not the same name anymore. And nobody called it former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia.
Of which it was named forever.
Yeah, and even the people that did use that name, they're still calling it Macedonia. What I want to ask these people, what do you want to call it instead? What is their name? If they're not Macedonia, who are they? Because, you know, their answer in all the reports I've seen is that they need to continue calling themselves this ridiculous multi-word name that has Macedonia in it. So you're still calling them that. At least this way, now they're North Macedonians, it's completely different. It's like West New York. That's in New Jersey. And you know what? We get along fine. But they're writing. I'm really upset at this. And that is the ultimate in nationalism on a really stupid level because you're really blocking progress, having a fight over nothing. They are your neighbors, after all. There's probably a few similarities. And we really need to move on. There's more important things to fight about.
Yeah, is there going to be another name change? I mean, when will it end? When will it ever be
you know
enough?
What? Whatever. Yeah, as Trump says, call it peaches if you want. But what is it that you want them to be called? Tell us that at least. Instead of saying what you don't want them to be called. So, yeah, nationalism tends to go down those roads. We could point to a whole lot of different examples. Speaking of which, nationalism resulted in Brexit. And, you know, this is something I just heard this week. Do you know there's a plan now to evacuate the Queen? There's a Queen evacuation plan. Her and members of the British royal family are to be spirited away to an undisclosed location outside London if a no-deal Brexit scenario incites riots. That's what they're planning for. That is what they are planning for. So it really makes you wonder how smart an idea Brexit was in the first place. Founded on nationalism, we're not getting a fair shake here. Really? You're not getting a fair shake? You're part of this huge organization of states that you have a say in, that you can vote in, that you probably have more power than a lot of other countries, and you just want to back out and cause all kinds of strife and uncertainty. Well, look how it is now. Look at all the craziness that's going on now. And March 29th is just around the corner. And if that day comes and there's no deal in place, it's going to be mass pandemonium. You still want to do this? That's what I think they should ask people. You still want to do this, knowing what you know now. It's not a second referendum. You're not basically saying the same question. It's, you know, with some conditions, saying we've done the research, we've done the negotiating, this is what we have, do you still want to go ahead with this? I don't understand how that is not being prepared right now, because obviously people have an opinion on this, and we should listen to their opinion, or they should listen to their opinion. I'm a spectator on this one.
Will David Cameron and Nigel Farage and Boris, will they all be whisked away as well?
I don't know.
I think they should have an evacuation. But I mean, just as an outsider looking in, but what do I know?
Well, I do know that these solutions, these quote unquote solutions, often aren't, that because they're not thought through, and they result in all kinds of turmoil and craziness, and people wind up paying for them for generations. So before you go down that road, Britton, think it over. Are you sure? You know, I say, you know, a number of times, go to your computer, delete all your programs. Your computer will say, "Are you sure?" Because it's a big step. And, you know, if it's good enough for your files, I think it's good enough for the people to ask them if they're sure. What's the harm? And if they are sure, okay, then you go ahead. Then everybody knows, no more doubt. And I think you'd wind up with a much better situation.
Yeah, and that's articulated, I think, what people want, are actually concerned about, you know, coming up to the brink like this. And maybe they'll have a more insight going into another decision. But at this point, yeah, maybe they can work around those things if they stay in.
Well, we are out of time. The world is a crazy place, and we love it that way. But we'll be back again next week. OTW at 2600.com. Have a good night.
Good night.
Trouble is all over town, yeah. He's pure looting and shooting and killing and burning out, them burning out. Your trouble is all over my hometown, yeah. He's pure looting and shooting and killing and burning out, them burning out. Your, but where do I stand in this year crossfire? Through the powers of the Most High, but through the powers of the Most High, I've got to praise. I'm still alive to give Jah glory. Yeah, I'm still alive to tell my story. Early, early this morning, I arose from my slumber. And when I looked through my belly bottom window, they were all around, yo. I see no faces, I hear a mouse voices ordering everybody just what to do. You can't make a move, no, no. Is then I remember Gigi and a baby brother, how they would suffer so fast. I'm the only breadwinner. That's when I scaled through a fence and over the wall. And there he was standing so big and tall. Say, don't make a move, else I'll shoot you, you're rude. He'll